Reading from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 1. Ardaratre duibai, aila prabhustane, pratame milena, nichananda haridasasane. Thus, in the dead of night, the two brothers, Dabir Kas and Sakar Malik, went to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu incognito. First, they met Nichananda Prabhu in Haridas Thakur. Dara duijan janaila, prabhur gochare, rupa sakar manikaila, Tomadiki Bale. Sri Nichananda Prabhu and Haridas Thakur told Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that two personalities, Sri Rupa and Sanatan, had come to see him. Duhi Guchatrina Duhi Dashana Darina Gale Vastra Bandi Pade Dandavatahaya. In great humility, both brothers took bunches of straw between their teeth and each binding a cloth around his neck fell down like rods before the Lord. Dainyarodana kare ananda vivala prabhu kahe utta utte hoila mangal. Upon seeing Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the two brothers were overwhelmed with joy. And out of humility, they began to cry. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked them to get up and assured them of all good fortune. Utti dui bai tabe danta te nadare danya koristu te kare karadaya kare. The two brothers got up, and again, taking straw between their teeth, they humbly offered their prayers with folded hands. Jai Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Daya Maya Patita Pavana Jaya Jaya Mahashaya. All glories to Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the most merciful Savior of all the fallen souls. All glories to the Supreme Personality. Nitya Jati Nitya Sangha Kari Nitya Kache Tomara Grete Prabhu Kahita Vasila Jaya. Sir, we belong to the lowest class of men, and our associates are employed. Our associates and employment are also of the lowest type. Therefore, we cannot introduce ourselves to you. We feel very much ashamed standing here before you. Matulya nasti papatma naparadi chakastana parihare pilajame kimbruve purushatam. Dear Lord, let us inform you that no one is more sinful than us. Not is there any offender like us. Even if we wanted to mention our sinful activities, we would immediately become ashamed, and what to speak of giving them up. Patita pavan heta tumaravata amahahi jagata patita mahiya. The two brothers submitted, Dear Lord, you've incarnated to deliver the fallen souls. You should consider that in this world there is no one so fallen as all. Jagamada dui karila udare taha udarite shrama nahila tumare. You've delivered the two brothers Jagai and Madai, but to deliver them you did not have to exert yourself very much. Brahmana jati tare navadvipagare nicha seva nahi kare nahi nichara kutpara. The brothers Jagai and Madai belonged to the Brahmana caste, and their residence was in the holy place of Navadvip. They never served low-class persons, nor were they instruments to abominable activities. Sabe ikka doshetare aya papachare paparasi dahi nama bashe tumane. Jagan and Madhai had but one fault. They were addicted to sinful activity. However, volumes of sinful activities can be burned to ashes simply by a dim reflection of the chanting of your holy name. Tomanam laya tomar karila nindan sei nama halatare muktira karan. Jagai and Madhai uttered your holy name by way of blaspheming you. Fortunately, that holy name became the cause of their deliverance. Jagai Madhai haita kuti kuti guna adamapatita papi amidui janna. We too are millions and millions of times inferior to Jagai and Madhai. We are more degraded, fallen and sinful than they. Mlecha jati mlecha sevi Karim Lecce Karma, Go Brahma, Drohi Shange, Amara Shangama. Actually, we belong to the caste of meat eaters because we are servants of meat eaters. Indeed, our activities are exactly like those of the meat eaters because we always associate with such people. We are inimical towards the cows and Brahmins. Mora karma mora hatte galaya bandiya kuvisaya vistagarte diyache filaya. The two brothers, Sakar Malik and Dabrikas, very humbly submitted that due to their abominable activities, they were now bound by neck and hands and had been thrown into a ditch filled with abominable stool-like objects of material sense enjoyment. And thus they continue to explain how they are most fallen. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was responding to this humility. So this is a very significant meeting because Rupa and Sanatan were from an aristocratic Brahmin family, a Sarasvat Brahmin family. This Sarasvat Brahmin community originally came from the banks of the river Sarasvati, and therefore they got that title as Sarasvat Brahmanas. But when the river Sarasvati began to dry up, at that time, the entire community became dispersed all over India, and a large contingent of the Sarasvat Brahmanas were invited by the kings of Karnataka. And thus Karnataka became a stronghold of the Sarasvat Brahman community. And they became very influential, and the kings bestowed upon them great opulence in the form of land and cows and so on. Therefore, the family that Rupa and Sanatan hailed from was an aristocratic zamindar family. But in the generation of his grandfather, there became a dispute over land between two brothers, and it got very serious, so much so that one of the brothers had to go. Or like that. So a whole branch of the family then left, and that was the branch in which later Rupa and Sanatan appeared. And initially they found shelter in Kannauj, which is now situated near Kanpur, and Kannauj is a very famous Brahmin village in India, like a very high standard of knowledge as traditionally come from Kannauj. So the Brahmin community there was held in very high esteem. Therefore, it was not uncommon that Brahmanas from Kannauj were invited to either South India or invited to East India. And in this case, the father of Rupa and Sanatan was invited to Bengal, in particularly to East Bengal in the Jessore district, which is not far from Mayapur, just across the border, really, just past Haridaspur, and then some 50, 60 kilometers into Bangladesh, we find the birth site of Rupen Sanat. There they lived in a village, and that village had a whole Karnataka Brahmin community. They had all come with them. So the family was were the leaders of the village. And Rupen Sanatan, as we know, were as students very outstanding, and it was a customary practice at the time amongst Muslim magistrates to appoint Hindu ministers, because they had experience that if they were appointing Muslim ministers, that oftentimes the Muslim ministers were killing the kings and declared themselves kings. So therefore they decided to appoint Hindu secretaries and Hindu ministers. And generally these ministers or secretaries would get the name Dabir Kash. So Rupa Goswami's name was Dabir Kash, and which means something like private secretary, and Sanatan Goswami was known as Sakar Malik. They lived in Ramakeli. And Ramakeli, it's interesting how to trace out how they were living in Ramakeli, and that is found in the Bhakti Ratnakar. The Bhakti Ratnakar describes how Ramakeli was at about 45 distance by foot from Goda, the capital of the Namak Hussein Shah. And today one can go to Goda and one can still see the ruins of the palace of the Nawab. And it looks a little bit like Gothic arches and Gothic galleries, very European kind of the palace of the Nawab. And there also is still the jail where Sanatan Goswami was kept, one can see. Rupa and Sanatan lived then nearby in their own village, Ramakeli, on the bank of the Ganga. And this village, Ramakeli, was like a Gupta Vrindavan or a hidden Vrindavan, a second Vrindavan. They were trying to establish there the spirit of Vrindavan. And however, if we think for a moment, then we can appreciate that at the time, Vrindavan was a bit forgotten, because this is the time before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself went there, before he sent Goswamis there to develop Vrindavan and excavate Vrindavan. So actually during this time that Rupa and Sanatan were staying in Ramakeli, Vrindavan was an overgrown jungle, and many of the places were forgotten.
That's a mercy.
That's nice. Yet, we see that at that time, Srila Rupa and Sanatan Goswami established in Ramakeli a Radhakund, a Shamakund, a Lalitakund, Vishakakund. They also established the deity of Madan Mohan in that place. And also, at that time, it appears that Rupa Goswami wrote the book, the Hansa Dutta, which is a book quite intimate, describing the separation that Radharani feels. She is lying on the bank of the river Yamuna in great separation, and then Lalita goes to bring some cooling water by dipping lotuses in the Yamuna, and to fan Srimati Radharani with these cooling lotuses because she's burning up in the fever of separation. And then there's this swan in the river, and Lalita decides that this swan is the solution, that this swan can save the life of Srimati Radharani, and therefore Lalita decides that this swan is going to be the messenger to go to Krishna. The swan doesn't know yet, but the swan is somehow or other engaged in this, and Lalita uses different tactics. And just as one preaches to a new person by offering some material incentives and some spiritual arguments at the same time, Lalita is very expertly preaching. Lalita is saying, you know, my dear swan, that if you go along the path that Krishna went, that everything will become all auspicious. Do you know that if you go along this path, that you will come to a place near Akshayvat, where there is a little cottage where amazing pastime took place? You can stop there for a while. No, you should not stop there, because when you stop there, you will not go any further. But no, I cannot deny you to stop there. In this way, Lalita was trying to awake spiritual curiosity. And then Lalita started to give some material benefits. And if you go this way, then you'll come to Mathura. And in Mathura, there is a palace. And it's amazing, because on that palace there is a roof terrace, and on the roof terrace there is a column, and on this column there is a life-size crystal swan. Wow. Any swan would like to see a statue like that. In this way, Lalita is offering a material incentive. And Rupa Goswami is very nicely written in this way. So the book continues, and it continues by Lalita trying to convince the swan to go, and it's not quite clear if the swan ever goes or not. Right? The book sort of ends without, it sort of ends open-ended. We'll never know if the swan surrendered or not. But anyway, at the end of the book, Srila Rupa Goswami writes that he is offering the book to his spiritual master, who is known in the world by the name of Sakar Malik. So that's very interesting, because why would Rupa Goswami write the Karmi name, the Muslim Karmi name of Sanatan Goswami, after Sanatan Goswami would have received the name Sanatan from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? So that doesn't make sense. Then if we look, actually in the Hansadutta, the journey is described that the swan is supposed to go. And then at one point it is described, yes, you will go through all the 12 forests. And, you know, actually, if you look at it, what is described there, it's geographically not right. It's right in terms of what is there in Vrindavan, from one who knows the scripture of Vrindavan, but it's not right on the ground. It's not actually what you get on the way. Whereas later, Rupa Goswami writes another book called the Uddhava Sandesh, and now it's coming from the other side. Now it is from Mathura, and Krishna is sending Uddhava and chooses Uddhava as a messenger. And this time he describes the route that Uddhava is supposed to go, and it's very exact. It's exactly describing the route according to where all the holy places are. So it's another indication that the Hansadutta was written before Rupa Goswami was in Vrindavan. So therefore, scholars think that the Hansadutta was written before, when Rupa and Sanatan were still residing in Ramakeli. What was happening in Ramakeli? It was amazing. Rupa and Sanatan, it says in Bhakti Ratnakara, had built very nice cottages on the bank of the river. And they invited there the greatest scholars of their time. And, of course, we know
from the Stavamala, that Sanatana Goswami is saying that Srimad Bhagavatam is my constant companion. Because in the Bhakti Ratnakar again, it is mentioned that Sanatan, when he was a young man, that once he had a dream. And that during the time when he had this dream, that in his dream a Brahmana appeared who offered him the full manuscript of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, that was not a small thing, because in those days, manuscripts were copied by hand. And Bhagavatam was 18,000 verses, so it was a serious manuscript to copy. And most Brahmanas would hand copy these things, 18,000 verses. Then if you had the Bhagavad Gita, is only 750 verses. So, you know, it's easier to copy a Gita, right? You can do 20 Gitas versus one Bhagavatam. So you could understand that not many were copying the Bhagavatam. Therefore, such manuscripts were not widely available, and generally speaking, they were kept in temples or some libraries, some natashalas. But to have a personal copy of the Bhagavatam, you know, was something extraordinary. Now we have one on our phone, on our computer. We have in all sizes and all formats, right? PDF, EPUB, Kindle. You know, I mean. It's like whatever you can have, right? But then we never look at it. But Sanatana Goswami, he is saying in the Stavamala that, well, no, first Bhakti Radhika, the dream continues and he gets the Srimad Bhagavatam from this Brahmana who comes to his house. And he's very, very happy. And then he wakes up, it was only a dream. A very nice dream, but only a dream. Then that day, that very same Brahmana came to his door, and lo and behold, he gave him Srimad Bhagavatam. Wow. So you can imagine that was not just, someone gave me the Bhagavatam, you know? I mean, no. He got it like in such a way that it really was ordained, an arrangement of Krishna, and therefore Bhagavatam, he took it as Krishna has sent me the Bhagavatam and desires that I read the Bhagavatam. And Sanatana Goswami, as is described in Bhakti Ratnakar, read the Bhagavatam every day. In Krishna Saramali, he says that the Bhagavatam became my constant companion. That meant that he was reading Bhagavatam so deeply, so profoundly, that not only when he was reading Bhagavatam was he preoccupied with Bhagavatam, but also when he was not reading, then Bhagavatam was in his consciousness. And he saw everything through the Bhagavatam. And therefore he himself became a Mahabhagavat, a person Bhagavat. So, it is said that scholars from all over India would assemble and would stay as the guests of Rupa and Sanatan, who would daily engage in discussions on the scripture. Sometimes they were summoned to the court of the king, and they would dress in aristocratic Muslim dress, being carried in opulent palanquins along the road of 45 minutes, summoned by the king. Actually, the court of the Nawab Hussein Shah is quite interesting. The scholar Joseph O'Connell, he has an interesting observation. He said that actually, not only were Rupa and Sanatan engaged in the service of the Nawab, there were so many Hindus engaged in the service of the Nawab. Many, for example, we have, what is the brother again? We have Goridas Pandit, right? And then his brother is known as Suryadas Sarakela. Suryadas Sarakela is another Muslim title, and he was engaged in the Muslim service, Pippalada was engaged in the Muslim service. There were many. So there was a whole community of associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who were all there at the court. And what they did is, since there was a big royal library, they ordered all these Vaishnava literatures also into the library. So they had quite an access to lots of books there. So actually there was a whole hidden Vaishnava culture going on in the Goda library. And Rupa and Sanatan, therefore, had access to a huge collection of scripture. And they used their positions to collect so many manuscripts and so on. So learned scholars were very interested to come and see that personal collection, and they were studying there, and there were everyday discussions on various scriptural issues and questions. So one can understand how deep was the understanding of Srila Rupa and Sanatana. It is said that in devotional service, in understanding devotional service, there are two elements. One is tattva. One is to properly understand tattva. Because without tattva, ras, or the mellows of bhakti, cannot fully flourish. If the tattva is not complete, then one's expression of the bhakti is also incomplete. We see how Sarup Damodar was the personal secretary of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we see that no one could approach Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu without first having met Sarup Damodar, because he would screen them. He would see how much, if whatever they were going to present to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, if that was in line with the proper conclusions. Because it was natural. See, many people, would come to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu not only because they came out of pure devotion, but they also came to get some advantage of that meeting. So they would, for example, they would like to read some of their writing to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because if you did that, then you could just advertise everywhere, "Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally listened to my commentary and he liked it very much." Oh, what sure. That must be very good then, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So many people wanted to read something to Mahaprabhu to get an endorsement. And therefore, Sarup Damodar Goswami was checking on such people. It is said that tattva is essential. Because when tattva is incomplete or wrong, how can rasa be understood? There's that famous pastime in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where one particular brahmana wanted to read his poem, and he had said that Lord Jagannath is the Lord of the universe in the non-moving form, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Lord of the universe in the moving form. And people thought that's sort of pretty good, Wow, good poetry. Sarup Damodar was going like murder on it. He ripped it to threads and he said, like, there is no difference between one and the other. You are making a distinction between Lord Jagannath and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whereas they are one and the same. Ouch. Rejected. So although such poetry may sound nice, but if it's not containing the conclusions of pure devotional service, tattva, then the ras cannot develop. Just like next to our temple in Vrindavan, there is a Babaji ashram which are our neighbors, and they chant a mantra which is similar to Nitai Gaur Radhisham Jai Krishna Balaram. I will not say that mantra. I refuse to say the mantra they are saying. I'm trying to forget that mantra. So I'm not going to say it. But Prabhupada's response to their mantra was, yes, we can say Nitai Gaur Radhisham Jai Krishna Balaram. Anyway, they have this mantra, which contains the name of Nitai Gaur and Radhisham. And by chanting that mantra, they get some ecstasy, Srila Prabhupada explains. Because Nitai Gaur, anyone who chants the names of Nitai Gaur can get some ecstasy. But, unfortunately, if we investigate the tradition, then we find that their understanding of who Nitai Gaur are is not correct. Because they say Nitai is Radharani and Gaur is Krishna. Okay. then you can dance in front of the altar with a lot of devotion, but if the tattva is that much off, right, then you're practically missing the boat. And there may be more subtle issues of tattva that are not correctly understood. And then one cannot fully express bhakti. So the two go hand in hand. And we see that. And we see, now there may be devotees who are by nature very scholarly.
Also amongst our acharyas. And others are very simple. Right?
And both are pure devotees. And both are going back to Godhead, without a doubt. Still, those devotees that are less scholarly are under the protection of the more scholarly devotees. I'm saying the pure scholarly devotees, not the scholars, that tattva is more important than ras. No, I'm saying, but we see that the intimate associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like Sarup Damodar Goswami, like the six Goswamis, like such personalities, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, they were all powerful devotees, but at the same time also very powerful in scripture. It is said in the same time in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that the Uttama Adhikari, or the topmost devotee, is very expert in explaining the conclusions of the scriptures. Of course, to put some weight on the other side, it's not about just learning. Yesterday we were discussing that with the Keshava Kashmiri Pandit and Nimai Pandit, that it's not all about learning. One important point is that it's about purity and realization. It is said that Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji was not able to read and write. So therefore, obviously, he could not extensively study so many scriptures. But what he did is he had others read from scripture, and then he would explain it. So that was, I'm speaking about Rupa and Sanatan, who were actually great devotees even before meeting Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yes. Apparently, the family was already a Vaishnava family. Apparently, they were already great devotees of Krishna. Even before meeting Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And yet, they presented themselves as being so fallen. Of course, externally, they were in a fallen position, undoubtedly, because they presented themselves as very sinful, and not just in a mood from, we are the most fallen, we are so sinful, we are the greatest sinners on the planet, like a dramatic actor on stage and crying tears and all that. No, they were very logical about it also. They gave explanation why. They said, because Jagai and Madhaya, they are so sinful because they were brahmanas in Navadvip and they engaged in so many sinful activities. But we are more sinful because we have basically served the Yavanas. We've served those who kill cows. We have served those who are against the brahmanas. And we are basically protecting them. And it is because of us that all these things are going on. And it is a fact that we see that Sanatana Goswami at one point after meeting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just couldn't do it anymore. The Nawab Hussain Shah was determined to now conquer Orissa. So he was getting ready, and Sanatana knew very well that if I am here governing the state, that will enable him to go. Therefore, indirectly, I will make offenses to Lord Jagannath. I cannot support this. And therefore, Sanatana Goswami just reported sick and didn't go to work. Well, you know what happens sometimes? Inspectors come, right? And sure enough, an inspector came to check, and the result was the inspector reported back that he's not sick at all, he's perfectly fine. Well, if you get in that situation, then you know that it could have serious consequences, and even 500 years ago, those things were not taken lightly. Sanatana Goswami was subsequently arrested for that particular feat and jailed because he was very blank frank and very straightforward and just told the Nawab from, I can't support you in your activities. You are going to give pain to Lord Jagannath. So he was jailed. Anyhow, Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis are the pillars of our movement. They are the principal acharyas. They are the most prominent leaders in this movement, actually. It is Rupa and Sanatana who give the foundation, and then of course Rupa Goswami is even more emphasized as the leader, and thus we are known as Rupanukas, followers of Rupa Goswami. So we can understand that they were sent for a particular purpose, and their so-called birth in so-called families and their so-called situation in the material world was simply there as an arrangement by the Supreme Lord to emphasize so many points. Many of the leaders of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were not coming from the best social position. Rupa and Sanatana were socially outcasts. According to the Hindu community, such a thing as engaging in the service of the Muslims, I mean, that's the end, you know. Then you are a Muslim. You're definitely no longer a Brahmana. I mean, this kind of rigidity in the Brahmin community has survived for a very, very long time, and maybe now it's changing. But, for example, if you read the diary of Gandhi, which I read, and, you know, called Experiments with the Truth, right? And Prabhupada would comment on it and say, experiments with the truth? How can there be experiments with the truth? The truth is the truth. There's no experiment. So Prabhupada would criticize the title. But anyway, there Gandhi also writes that as soon as he went to England, and when he came back in his village, they didn't accept him anymore. Half the village wanted to throw him out from the Brahminical caste. The other half was sort of okay. So he went with that half and kept his Brahminical status. And but it's interesting that that even he had to face that.
So
when you look at the five Pandavas, right, all the five Pandavas are pure devotees, all of them, and including Bhima, right? But Bhima, you know, sometimes needs Yudhisthira to protect him, right? He needs Yudhisthira to hold him back. All the Pandavas. I mean, one of my favorite stories that is that story where, you know, it had been. The Pandavas were being they were banned in the forest for about, and it was the 12th year. So one day Karna came, and Karna had this great idea. He said that, you know, I have recently heard from some spies where the Pandavas are. So why don't we go there in royal opulence, mounted on elephants, showing all our queens and everything, and just to rub it in. It's like, do it on set. Brilliant, brilliant idea. Brilliant. So Duryodhana did it. He arranged the whole opulent caravan to go on an excursion there to the forest, and the queens all decked up and this and that. Then, as they passed along the way, there was a lake. And as they came past this lake, there was a Gandharva. So the army naturally wanted to go to the lake because a lot of animals, and they want to drink, you know, where are you going to get water for so many animals? So they wanted to go to the lake. And then this Gandharva came and said, stop, you cannot go any further. This lake is under our control. Now here is Duryodhana with a huge army and so many soldiers and so many elephants. So Duryodhana said, like, you see who I brought in today, okay? And you better get out of the way, you know, before, you know, I show you something, right? Anyway, it became a huge fight. And of course, the Gandharva was also not alone, and within no time there were lots of Gandharvas, and there was a whole fight between the Gandharvas, and these Gandharvas are terrible fighters, and even all the Kurus and so on, they got into serious trouble. Even Karna was in trouble, and you know, many ran for their life. Meanwhile, the news reached Pandavas who were nearby. So Bhima says, this is amazing. These Gandharvas are doing us a great favor. It's like, you know, this is a wonderful thing. Yudhisthira said, no, Bhima. He said, amongst us, there are Kurus and Pandavas. But for the world, we are all Kurus. We are one family. We've got to go and save Duryodhana. Save Duryodhana? All the four other four brothers said, what? Save Duryodhana? I mean. And then Yudhisthira said, yes, we must save Duryodhana. Then next thing he says, but I'm busy with a yagya here, so I cannot go, but you go. So that was tough. But they went, and then the next thing that happened was, is Arjuna enters into the battle, starts shooting so many arrows, and all the Gandharvas start to get hot on their heels, you know, and they sort of like... So since Gandharvas fly, they decided to take Duryodhana up into the sky. And then Arjuna shot so many arrows so fast that he created a net in the sky. And the Gandharvas could not escape. Then the Gandharvas came down and said, look, you know, we're just doing this to help you. Right? Indra asked us to do it, actually. Right? But Arjuna was very determined. He said, no, we turn Duryodhana right now. And so in this way, Arjuna saved Duryodhana's life. The story goes on and on and on, and once you go into the Mahabharata, you know, 3 hours later, it never ends. So you gotta stop somewhere. But the point is there, that sometimes, even pure devotees need to be restrained by other pure devotees who are more balanced, who are more rooted in deeper transcendental knowledge. And in this way, Duryodhana was balancing out all his pure devotee brothers. Not Yudhisthira, sorry, always the Mahabharata, all those names. Start again. Yudhisthira, not Duryodhana. Yudhisthira. So that's amazing. And in the same way, Rupa and Sanatan are the protectors of this movement. They are giving us complete shelter in great detail. In great detail. They have described the entire process of devotional service, and virtually speaking, at every step, there are directions. It's a phone that is giving a signal.
I want to put the phone on the airplane
mode.
Flight mode.
There's a few options.
Shut off the phone.
There's a few options. One is shut up. Shut up. The other option is throw it out of the window. And other one, the most easy one, is flight mode. So that we can go to higher regions. So Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami are giving us the perfect means of Vaishnav behavior. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu once, in relation to interaction between Jagadananda and Sri Chaitanya and Sanatana Goswami, gave some instructions. Sanatana Goswami's body was covered by sores because he had been in Jharkhanda and he drank bad water. And he was in Jagannath Puri, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to embrace him. So he found that very, very... horrible, because his body had sores, so he felt, I am a big offense and this is too much. The Lord is just touching me. And he complained, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, it's nectar. And it's like, wow, Sanatana Goswami couldn't bear it. So he spoke to Jagadananda. And Jagadananda said, well, the Lord had told you that eventually you should go to Vrindavan. He said, you stay here for a while. Now you've been here long enough. So just go to Vrindavan. Later, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard it, then he got so angry. He said, who is this Jagga? Who is this Jagga? Who is this upstart Jagga? Jagga is just a boy. What does he think that he can instruct you? I even would go to you for advice. Bah, Jagga. I will never accept anyone who doesn't follow Vaishnav etiquette, he says there. Sadhachar, so strong statement. And he had asked Sanatana Goswami later on to write a book about Vaishnava etiquette. So, okay, we got that from Sanatana Goswami. We got Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which is so rich and gives the tattva in full of the tattva of Krishna praying and how to attain it. And then we see the behavior of a pure Vaishnava. How one actually can conduct himself purely. Sanatana Goswami describes it in great detail. And then Srila Rupa Goswami, step by step, leads us to pure, unalloyed, ecstatic, devotional service without a grain of compromise. So these two brothers are at the core, at the very center of our of the movement of Lord Chaitanya. It is through them that Lord Chaitanya reveals his teachings. It is through them that the Holy Dham has been revealed. One who is not taking shelter of Srila Rupa Goswami cannot actually attain full success in devotional service. It's not possible. So therefore, here we are at a very important point in the book, the point where Rupa and Sanatana are surrendering to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Later, in the Madhya Lila, we get a description of the teachings to Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, but that will save for another day, because you can't cover everything in one lecture. So, it is like that. In the beginning, we come to this movement, and
we get to know
Bhagavad Gita.
We get to know
Arjuna. We begin to understand a little bit. Who is Arjuna? Then we want to know a little bit behind the Bhagavad Gita. And maybe one day we'll just read a little bit of Mahabharata. So just to fill in all the names that are there in the first chapter in our knowledge. And gradually we get to know a little more. There are many personalities that we need to know. Just like in Sridhar Mayapur is very nice. Because it is Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur that uncovered Sridhar Mayapur as the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then it is particularly the followers of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the form of Bhaktisiddhanta, Prabhupada, and Gaudiya Math that are developing Sridhar Mayapur. And therefore, in no place we find the pure Gaudiya history, the recent Gaudiya history, more displayed than in Mayapur. Vrindavan, there are so many different influences, Nimbarkas, and so many Babaji's, and so many different traditions are all mixed in Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, the Gaudiyas are part of the landscape, but in Mayapur, they are the landscape. So in that way, all these things we have to get acquainted with, we have to get to know. We have to visit the samadhi of Narottamdas Thakur. And then we have to, on the side, bow down to the samadhi of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And like this, little by little, we have to become acquainted with all these acharyas and get to know them and get to know their writings. So that we become deeply rooted. Or otherwise, we can be protected by those who are deeply rooted. And as we are all protected by Srila Rupa and Goswami, who are most deeply rooted in the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and who upon the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nana Shastra Vichari Naikanipuno Sadharma Samstapako, who were very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the Vedic scriptures to establish the principles of true religion. And that, in that way, we are protected by these transcendental brothers. Okay. Thank you very much for listening. Maybe some questions or comments. Ah, yes.
You were talking about Tattva and Rasa. If you take Srimad Bhagavatam, itself says that this is full of rasa and this is for rasika bhaktas. So if we are not rasika bhaktas, it's like we need really to divide tattva first, then it's rasa, or it's mixed.
Mixed.
Even if one is 100% in tattva, so to say.
Simultaneous. From day one, we come in the temple, and we smell that unique smell that is nowhere in the world, incense and mixed with the exotic smells coming from the kitchen, and kirtan, the amazing darshans. I came to Vrindavan and I had read some books of the Hare Krishna movement. But I came to Vrindavan, to our Krishna Balaram Mandir, and I reached at just before 7 at night. So at that time, at 6:45 in the temple, they had a Tulasi Arati in the evening. So I'm coming in the temple, and all the people are bowing down to a plant. And I'm sort of there, it's like, and here we go, you know. here we go, we're going to bow down to a plant now, you know. So I was like sort of a little skeptic watching the whole thing. I definitely didn't bow down. And then the next moment, when it was over, then suddenly these big doors opened of the altar and this little albino pujari came out. You may know him, right? Anyway, Dari Baksha from Nepal. He is like an albino. So completely white, and white hair and like very white. And he comes out, this little white man comes out from behind the big doors, you know. And then he blew the conch shell, and that blew my mind. Wow. You know. I mean, I was sort of, this is not from this world. So that introduction, first these people bowing down to a plant, it sort of shocked my mind. Next moment, an albino pujari opens the door, which sort of took my mind to another level, right? Sort of out of the normal realm. And then suddenly the doors open and there is this amazing darshan, this amazing darshan of Krishna and Balaram and of Radhasham. And I was just overwhelmed. And the hairs on the body stood on end. Shock. It wasn't Bhava, I tell you that. Whatever it was. But the point is that rasa is there from the very first day, from the very first moment. There is taste. If there was no taste, Prabhupada says in the introduction of the Nectar of Devotion, nothing moves without taste. Nothing moves without taste. So there's taste, but then we must understand it in proper context. Not that I start thinking, oh wow, I have symptoms of Bhava. I should understand, this is Chaya Bhava, right? This is like the shadow reflection of Bhav, the mercy that I'm getting from the Dham and the devotees, and then in that, you know, by white pujaris and so on, and all these things. So, rasa and tattva are developing side by side. And this is an ongoing process. And not first, you know, first tattva, rasa is radioactive. Or only Ras, you know. All that, you know. That's probably some tattva also. Ongoing. Because we are relishing that tattva. It's funny that the first seven chapters of the Chaitanya Charitamrita are all tattva, right? They're establishing actually Pancha Tattva in a very technical way. So it's quite analytical, philosophical, and so on. So when I was first reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I think these first seven chapters, like, unreadable almost, and I would just like jump to the next chapters, you know? Now, these first seven chapters, I love to read them. Right? Now, it's just like, wow, they are really nice, you know, reading them, because so precise, right? Just so clear, so crystal clear. And that makes it so wonderful. Because, you know, in India now, many people are becoming Christian, yeah? Especially in the south, of course. And why is it so? Because it's so simple, right? There's only one God, and it's like, that's all there is, it's simple. So don't need to think. Whereas actually, the Vedic tradition is complicated. I mean, why so many manifestations, why so many forms, and so on? And if you don't understand the tattva, and you don't understand how all the forms of the Lord are connected with each other, then you start to think that it's polytheism. That's just, there's many gods, and you just choose one. Like a menu. I think I'll have a little of Ganesh because he's cute, and I'll have some Durga Puja because you never know. And, you know, maybe some Krishna, for maybe some Shiva, then, you know, get a little power. And then, you know, a little bit of Krishna at the end for some sweet. It's not a menu. The Vedas are not a menu that should sort of select something. Tattva is needed to understand the correlation between all the manifestations of the Lord properly. Why all these expansions of Krishna? So that he is totally free for his own transcendental pastimes. Tattva. Then we are ready for.
You're speaking about protection.
Protection.
I didn't have time to, when in your early class, you explained that when we deviate, then Krishna is there, right there.
He is there?
Yeah, and you're explaining your, when you left Vrindavan and it happened so many things. You went to Benares and the home. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I encounter so many things in my personal, like when I try to kind of be in my own or be more independent, then Krishna puts stop at once in a filium. But then I was thinking, when you live according to the standard, but then when you need maybe a little boost or in the right way, then you have to come in the front of altar and kind of pray 20 times and nothing happens. Can you say, I mean, you understand what I mean?
Sure.
When you do, yeah.
I mean, most devotees sometimes feel that Krishna is active in their life. You know, it's not that we're only living with teachings. We actually feeling that Krishna is an active agent in our life, but not on our command, right? Not when we go in front of the deities and now I need a sign, Krishna, okay, you know, I'll give you 5 minutes. No. But Krishna sometimes appears, you know. I mean, I remember one particular incident. It's like, it's now quite some years back, but I had already taken sannyas and for some years at least, you know, at that time. And I was in the Amsterdam temple, and there was an issue that about Tulsi, you know, in the winter it's always difficult with Tulsi, and there was a lady that looks after Tulsi, right? At the time she looked after Tulsi. And she made a whole thing that, you know, Tulsi needed more care and more protection, and she wanted like a glass box for Tulsi, you know, with like a light inside and so on. And she goes, yes, and this thing cost 3,000 euros. So I've lived in India for a long, long time, and automatically, right, in India, the mind goes, glass box, how much glass, how much wood, electric element, how much can that cost, right? In India, automatically the mind analyzes the box and the value of the box, and go like, look, there is four panels of glass, a little bit of wood, and so many hours of labor, you know, how can that be 3,000 euros, right? So I go, 3,000 euros. I was shocked, right? And I said something. And suddenly, I was not the nice Maharaj anymore. Suddenly, I was a Tulsi killer. And the Mataji was like, you know, sending like fiery looks at me that was serious, you know what I mean? So, and she started to argue with me, and I made some nasty remark. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I did. And I said something like, you know, typical women or something condescending. Sorry, I did. And then later, I was walking in the street. And, you know, I'm just chanting, and it's like, suddenly this man comes, and he looks like a bum, you know, and actually someone who lives on the street, you know, by his clothes and so on, man, look smelly and this, that, like a bum from the street. And maybe some Indian background, like indirect, you know, not like directly from India, but some generations, like we have many, people from Suriname, so maybe from Suriname, and he goes like, why did you send me away? I said, what are you saying? He's like, you know, he says, like, it's a hell of a day today, you know? He's like, why did you send me away? You know, it's like, you know, I don't know, I didn't send you away. Yes, you did, you sent me away, why did you send me away? I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't send you away. Just relax, you know. But if you don't calm down, I'm going to send you away right now. You know. And he said, no, you sent me away. You sent me away. When you were singing in the street, you sent me away. Just because I was talking to the women. But if I cannot talk to the women, you can also not talk to the women. Whoa. Whoa, you know. I said, Krishna is talking through the mouth of this man, there's no doubt about it, right? It's like, you may not believe that it is so, and someone may say, you're just imagining these things, but I'm saying, no, it's quite clear that Krishna is giving me a message. No. Yeah. So, I think many devotees will be able to tell some instance where they feel that Krishna was interfering in their life. And that way we live with Krishna. And that's very nice. But you can't force it. And then we try to force it. And we try to force Krishna. Now I need an answer. no insult, nothing. You know, like Nrsimhadev talks to all kinds of people, you know. I mean, some Mataji, right? Some Mataji goes, prays to Nrsimhadev, and he gives her a whole answer. I'm a Swami, and he never says anything to me. What's going on? You can't force these things. No, it's just, you know. Are we finished? I think so. Okay, thank you very much for your time. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Shri Gaur Purnima Mahamahotsav.